Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA writer at The Athletic, here with Anthony Slater, normally West Coast, now in the great state of Tennessee, looking dreary-eyed. No offense, Slater, love you, but I'm seeing it a little bit. I'm seeing it. We had Clay Day last night, and you were at the arena very late. Good old Chase down by the bay, and you were nice enough to give me a ride to my car in the middle of the night to truck on down the road to catch an early flight to get to Memphis through where again? I know you weren't direct.
Dallas.
Okay. You loving that beat writing life right now?
It was a lot easier when I could just hop on Zoom and go to any press room I wanted the last few years from my couch.
Bite your tongue. It's, as a member of the PBWA, yeah. I don't want to hear that.
Well, look, it's way better from a work product standpoint, 100%. I am enjoying being back on the road. I'm enjoying feeling somewhat normal. But yeah, these are the days when it is a 7 a.m. flight after a long night in the arena. And you wake up, you're like, wait, I'm in Tennessee. And then now tonight, like James Wiseman is at you know, he went to high school in Memphis. His jersey's getting retired across town. I can either go to that or randomly the Warriors are sending Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody to a G League game that's actually 15 minutes down the road, but it's in Mississippi. It's like right across.
Got you running.
It's right across the border. And I'm like, am I going to Mississippi tonight? I'm like, wasn't I just in San Francisco last night? It's just it's very confusing. This is the life of beat writers at times.
Life of a beat writer. All right. To give folks a quick breakdown of today's show, we have a very exciting guest coming on the back end. The one and only John Hollinger is going to join us. We're going to talk all things Memphis Grizzlies, his old stomping grounds and trade deadline stuff, plenty to get into there. But Slater and I and quite a few others were at that Klay Thompson reunion last night, and we did want to highlight it, spin it forward. Did I call it a reunion? See, I'm a little tired too.
You know, that high school return. Reunion, they had some high school reunion vibes.
I don't know why I said reunion. Return, 941 days. If you haven't heard that number by now, then you're not tuned in. 941 days since Klay went down in game 6 of the 2019 NBA Finals, obviously with an ACL tear, and then November 2020 goes down with an Achilles tear. You know, one of the most unique and challenging injury situations in my entire career covering pro sports, let alone the NBA. And it was a really, really interesting night. You know, I made the choice to make the drive. As you know, I've been complaining the last couple of years about how from my home base, getting to Chase Center is tougher than getting to Oracle. So I, you know, but for Klay Day, it was worth the trip over the bridge and the parking snafus and all those types of things to see 18,000 plus, you know, show support for this guy that, as we know, and as you guys have written so many times and captured, that the Bay loves him back. This dude is just cut different and wired in the kind of way that resonates with the people of that entire region. I know you've written about it and you've probably done, you know, quite a few interviews today about it, but, you know, just takeaways from the night. What's going to kind of resonate and stay with you?
Well, 941 days is the number that, as you said, is gets referenced a bunch, but I think the big one's like he was just turned 29 when he hurt the ACL, and he's turning 32 next month. I mean, that part of his career, the fact that it's not just, you know, he lost a few seasons, he lost 29 to 32. Essentially. And, you know, I think that hits
him. Prime real estate.
Yeah. I mean, and you think about when he got injured. I mean, that was like a highlight moment in his career. He was like better than Kawhi Leonard in game six. Do you remember that game?
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, he was like the story of the night. And
you're on the floor with Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard.
No KD because KD got hurt. But
Kevin's out. I'm sorry. Damn it. There goes my point. Well,
but generally that adds to like the whole, remember the only reason that game existed, the only reason he got hurt, you know, if you want to go butterfly effect, is because after Durant did get hurt in Toronto, him and Steph Curry dragged them from that game five, like presumed lost. I mean, they hit three threes in the final 30 seconds when Toronto was like, remember Toronto was like celebrating the finals. Anyways, I went down a road. Right. I didn't mean to. Yeah.
So. No, I'm with you. And I was going to piggyback because the butterfly effect was on my mind last night for a different reason. And I wrote some of this, but I'll be honest later, you know, some nights at the office, you end up pumping your fist and saying, man, I killed it. And then others, you kind of go, oh boy, I left some money on the table. So I tried to go down memory lane a little bit regarding the what if scenario of 2014 when the Warriors decided not to trade Klay Thompson. And the part that kind of gets forgotten is that, you know, that Draymond Green was part of those discussions as well. And the prospect of the Warriors losing Klay and Draymond in exchange for Kevin Love and Kevin Martin, who they didn't want, but would potentially be their starting shooting guard instead of Klay Thompson. It's a wild what-if scenario to look back at, because of obviously who Klay and Draymond became after that, what the Warriors accomplished. And so the theme that I tried to hit on was the idea that defense was the priority then. That's why they chose not to do it. Defense is a priority now, and it's a major part of their identity. But the butterfly effect stuff that I missed and that I should have kept diving down that rabbit hole is the idea that, you know, the one and only Andrew Wiggins now is a major part of what this Warriors team is doing. And at that time, you know, Andrew was, you know, he headed to Minnesota because Flip Saunders, then running the T-Wolves, had ended up doing that Kevin Love deal with Cleveland instead of the one with the Warriors. So it's a hell of a thing to unpack all of that and think about how Wiggins is now expanding the Warriors' window. Klay obviously stayed put. Draymond stayed put, became an incredible player. And Kevin Love's had a wonderful career, but because they happened to play the Cavs last night, pregame, Klay gets a lot of love from Kevin sideline right before he takes the floor, right before tip-off. Now, those guys, of course, grew up in Oregon together, played baseball together, are very close. And then even after the game, Kevin went and gave him a big hug and was obviously very happy to see him back. But, I mean, you talk about a butterfly effect. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah, I mean, in that Kevin Love going to the Cavaliers for Andrew Wiggins triggered the rivalry, the Warriors-Cavaliers rivalry that defined the era. Yeah, I mean, there's so much because that's what happens when you become the team of an era, essentially. You know, we are getting a note, by the way.
I see this. John Hollinger is here a little bit early. I love it.
Let's just let's get him in and see if he's got some takeaways from Klay Thompson's first game. I'm sure he's had at least.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not every day you get John Hollinger. So we are going to take a quick commercial break. On the other side, John will join us. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome back. We have got the special guest that we talked about. John Hollinger is in the house. What's up, brother?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm in Memphis. What do you think about that?
Nice.
He's awesome. Isn't this perfect? Isn't this perfect, John?
That's great. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to pretend, you know, I'm big on being humble as a podcast host. I'm not going to pretend any of this was by design. It wasn't, folks. It just, you know, came together beautifully, though. John just wrote about his Memphis Grizzlies. Of course, we call them his because he worked there for 7 years.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I know it's the time is marching on, John. I do feel like we have to remind people just in case they forgot that you were in that front office in a pivotal part during some of their best years. And I mean, that obviously bleeds into your coverage a lot. And I love how you always write with a bit of a first person kind of perspective on Memphis and use that, you know, kind of filter that you earned during your time there. But they are on fire. We're going to get to them in just a hot minute, but I want to finish this Klay Thompson discussion that we were having before. So John, we were sharing with the listeners just how Slater and I were obviously there late last night, you know, watching Klay get hugs from Kevin Love would send you down memory lane because there was the whole what if scenario with Minnesota back in 2014. There's so many layers to this thing, but we were there trying to do our thing. I'm assuming you were watching from home. What sort of perspective and takeaways did you have watching this guy who hadn't played ball in 941 days on a NBA floor?
Honestly, I was watching the Wisconsin-Maryland game so I could write about Johnny Davis this morning.
Damn it, John.
I'm not even kidding.
Damn it.
Have you seen any of the highlights?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
The most amazing thing to me on that dunk was not the fact that he dunked, but the fact that he dribbled four times before he did it.
I mentioned this to Marcus on our post-game podcast last night. He dribbled so much last night. There was one possession he had 10 dribbles on. He was like wandering into drives. He was doing like isolation. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because he spent the last 2 years mostly doing individual work, but like he was like dribbling, over-dribbling at times last night. Maybe Draymond wasn't there either, which might add to it. But
was it 11 dribbles in the famous 60-point game? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you kind of wonder if you spend a lot of time, and John, you probably have the best outlook on this front. Like if you spend a ton of time, not only rehabbing, but then rehabbing to a point where, and I wrote this, like, you know, his people say he could have played in early December. You know what I mean? Like he's been ready for a while and they took their time. So if you're actually running and you're really playing, but you're playing with a bunch of guys who are below your level, I do feel like, you know, that inevitably is going to lead to more ISO play, more dribbling, and more freelancing than you would if you're playing in Steve Kerr's system.
I don't really know what it's like to play with people who are below my level as a player. So I can't really relate to that.
Fair point.
He has definitely like just mostly just done individual work though. I mean, that's all I've seen for the last couple of years when he's been on the court. I mean, you know,
I do spend a lot of time alone, so I can relate to that part.
We caught most of that. Your Wi-Fi wasn't liking your joke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Did you say you spent a lot of time alone? That's what you can relate to?
Yeah.
Well, you don't spend that much time alone. You spend a lot of time with Nate Duncan. So the part of me that's just, I'm so happy to have you on this podcast because we all know that you and Nate do your thing on your pod. But no, I mean, John, let's take it here. Mm-hmm. The Warriors had already become kind of a badass team again before Klay came back. The little wrinkle that I certainly didn't see coming is that right about the time Klay was going to come back, that, you know, and we were talking about the West in terms of Golden State, Phoenix, and Utah. Here come the Grizzlies to say, no, hold on a second, that there might be a top four in the West and another team that might deserve that kind of distinction as being elite. Read your column, enjoyed it. You know, like you kind of hinted at, Jaren Jackson Jr. is a major part of that. And you were part of the group that drafted him in 2018, but a lot of great guys putting in good work over there. What are you seeing as far as this rise they're part of right now?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously you know, getting Morant at number two in 2019 is the key to the whole thing. But then trading up, or actually, I think they traded in actually to get Bain at 30, just to take Enes Kanter's $5 million. And I think they gave up 2 seconds in that. I mean, they hit that pick out of the park. I mean, Bain's become such a deadly shooter, and pairing him with Morant now, where Morant is so good at dribbling and creating, and now you have this deep shooter next to him. It's just been a lethal combination. And now you look at the Grizzlies, they have a clean cap sheet. They have trade assets. They have expiring contracts. Like, is the window open now? Is it open at the beginning of next year? Like, if the window isn't open right now, it's definitely open soon, right? And so you start thinking more in terms of, up until now, it's been win later decisions, right? Like, from the moment we traded Mark in February 2018, I think it was, the years run together. It might be 2019. But from that moment, it's all been all about the future. I think now all of a sudden it's like, hey, now we got to go back to being about the present, and they have expiring contracts. They have different things they can do. They're deep as hell. But again, in a playoff situation, it really comes down to your top five or six guys. And so, can they make meaningful upgrades with what they have right now? Is there somebody out there who represents that upgrade, or are they better off just waiting till the off season?
What's Bane on a title contender? Like, what, you know, like 3 years from now, can he be a third best player? Four? Like, where are you at on Bane?
Yeah, probably like the number three or four guy, right? Like realistically, if you're contending for a title, you probably have two of the best 20 players in the league, at least. The Grizzlies would say, looking forward, they would have one of them, certainly. Do they have that second guy right now? You know, can Jaren Jackson become that? Maybe. Do they need to trade for that? Try to get that guy that way? Maybe. I think that's where you question a little more. And then I think everything after that kind of snaps into place if you get that second really high level guy, because then, you know, Bane can play off of that. Brooks, obviously, when he comes back, the bench again is really strong. You know, you have these guys, Melton, Jones, Konkar, you know, Steven Adams. A couple of those might have to be contracts that go into a trade, obviously, but they're so crazy deep.
The Brooks injury obviously is not great, MCL, but like you kind of chronicled, you know, they've been winning games when Ja's out, winning games when Dylan's out, and that depth is coming in. I wonder, John, I mean, again, you spent 7 years there. You still have, you know, connective tissue to this group. But you think about the Grizzlies nationally, and we all know, like, listen, they don't get a ton of media attention. I guarantee you that they were ecstatic that you wrote a column about them today, because they're just not getting the kind of love. If the Lakers were doing something like this, it would be all day, every day, all over the country. But if you ask Joe Blow, casual fan, about, you know, who represents the Memphis Grizzlies, once you get past Ja, and even if you get outside the player realm, they, you know, I think about the fact that, like, Zach Kleiman's not a guy who people know, you know what I mean? Their executive VP and the GM of their team. You know, Taylor Jenkins is a guy that could walk into your local Safeway and not get harassed by anybody. Maybe not in the heart of Memphis, but in most places. Like, as you assign credit here, and I know it's a collective type thing, and you know the way they've built this thing, who kind of pops into your mind first, and how do you see just the way they put it together?
You mean in terms of the building of
beyond
the team,
beyond, right? Beyond drafting Ja, uh-huh. How do you see the way they have built this thing, and who do you give a hat tip to regarding?
It's hard because I'm so connected to this, obviously. I mean, getting the picks on Bane and Brooks, turning those two into pretty good starters. I mean, I think that is a huge part of it. And then the Conley and Gasol trades, beyond draft, the getting in the lottery for Ja and Jaren, obviously, was the two most important things, and that required good fortune and some losing, right?
Yep,
but
yep.
Beyond that, the Conley trade, I think, was huge because they just got so much asset wise out of that. And the in terms of the trade exceptions, and then taking the trade exceptions from Jermichael Green and making it a bigger exception. And that's what enabled them to do the Melton trade. That's what enabled them to get, that's sort of what opened the door for them to get into that Bane trade even. And so it just created so many opportunities for them. And still going forward, they're still sitting on that Golden State pick from the Iguodala deal. So like they're still reaping kind of the benefit of that. And then Gasol, obviously they got Valanciunas out of that, who is now Steven Adams, plus allowed them to trade up in two different drafts as a result of that trade. So I think just a lot of things happened within a pretty short period there. I was there for some of it, but by no means all of it. And that's, it's just almost this cascading thing now where one good decision is sort of created the conditions for another good or even better decision, which is created, you know, what we have now. It's all kind of built on each other. Nailing the Jenkins hire, I think, was huge too, though. I mean, I think this is the year where he's really shown that he's the right guy there, because their start was not great. If you remember, I mean, they were 9-10, they were hemorrhaging points on defense. And he pulled them out of that ditch. And so I think this is the year where he's really earned his stripes as a head coach. And he's had some harder decisions to make with more guys who had established themselves and showed maybe they deserve minutes, and really pushing Bane into a much bigger role, and what he did with him in summer league, putting him on the ball to get him that responsibility. So I think this is the year, this is the year that's really shown that I think the Jenkins hire was the right one. And it's funny, it could end up 1-2 in the coach of the year this year. It could. Taylor Jenkins and JB Bickerstaff.
Yeah. They really could. I mean, the Cavs have fallen off a little bit. Yeah. But yeah.
Cleveland's second half schedule is light, though.
They're okay. They're in Sacramento tonight, Sam. So
I'm a game time decision. I haven't decided yet.
No.
I've told you before, though, I think that free Tesla juice might get me up there. That might be the X factor.
Oh, yeah. Plug it in. Why were they so bad defensively? I mean, I know Brooks missed the first part of the season. I know when Morant went out, they kind of turned it around defensively. But they've survived now that he's been back on that end. Like, because I know, you know, I saw them in the play-in, like, you know, the way Dylan Brooks guarded Steph, but the way they bothered the Warriors. And then even in an early season game, while they were the 30th ranked defense, they defended the Warriors well and chased and beat them. I'm about to see that matchup tomorrow night. Why were they bad early, and why have they turned it around on that end?
So it was really hard for me to figure out why they were so bad, actually, because I think there was some 3-point variance going on, but that wasn't all of it. There was just this like weird kind of malaise. Like they were just, I don't know if they were just too focused on the offense or what, but it was just bad all over. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. has definitely really stepped up on that end though, in the last, say, 5-6 weeks. And I don't know if that's just a consequence of him really being comfortable with the knee and everything or what, but he has been way more impactful than he was early in the season, certainly. And I think Ja has probably improved his attention to detail on that end too, because I mean, early in the season, he really probably wasn't very good on that end, if we're being honest.
Guys, my last thought on the Memphis front, because I do want to pivot, and I know John's a little pressed for time, and we got to talk trade deadline season because it's starting to heat up here for sure. But, you know, you mentioned, John, that Ja is obviously the linchpin of this whole thing. That 2019 draft quickly has become fascinating because obviously you got Zion with all of his health issues and Ja standing out kind of above the rest. You know, RJ Barrett, DeAndre Hunter from there, Darius Garland. You know, the gap between Ja and the rest of the field, and I know it's early and we got to judge these things over the course of 5, 6, 7 years, but my God, what he's doing right now as a guy coming out of Murray State and just looking like a future MVP candidate is just remarkable.
It, you know, it's funny. So I went to scout him because I was still working for the Grizzlies his draft year, early in that season. And I was actually the only scout at the game. They were playing Missouri State, but a guy came down in transition and tried to shoot a floater over him. And Ja went up. It wasn't as explosive as this play last night. Like don't get crazy here, but he went up and he blocked the shot with two hands and caught it. right in front of me. And I was like, holy crap. Like, did that just
John,
happen?
Is this the one that somebody actually, it might've been another play, but somebody earlier today spliced a video of last night next to a Murray State highlight. It might be the one you were talking about. Cause they were saying that this is not the first time he's done something like this.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. So it was funny to see that. Cause it was like a little bit like, I don't know, full circle is the right word or whatever for me. And obviously if you did that draft again, I mean, John Morant totally goes number one.
Yeah.
And just,
what did you think at the time though? Give me the scouting breakdown on him at the time. What did you think?
Oh, I mean, we were on him from the start of that season. Cause his numbers from his freshman year were really good. And like even halfway through his freshman year, we're like, who's this Morant guy at Murray State? Like, are you sure these, I'm asking the analytics people, are you sure these numbers are right? Like, what's going on here? But that was a short drive for us. So we were able to go up there a few times. Like, sure. We were very familiar with him. I think it was pretty clear to virtually everyone that it was Zion, Ja, and then you got to Barrett and everyone else in terms of how that draft shaped up to people. I wasn't in the draft room then because the Grizzlies had made some changes by then, obviously, but I think it was a pretty easy call to take him at number two, to be honest. I think everyone was
sure
pretty much on the same page on that one.
Sure, sure. All right, good stuff on the Grizz. Let's talk trades, guys. John, you and I talked offline a little bit earlier this week. You know, it's kind of that time of year where we start talking shop and figuring out what the next 3-4 weeks is going to look like. February 10th is the deadline. You know, we are waiting for that December 15th date to come and go where so much more of the league is going to be available and is now available for trade. Shams Charania today dropped an inside pass looking at Ben Simmons again, talking about Atlanta as an option and John Collins as a possible target for Philly, which is certainly something I had heard as well. I don't know where you want to start, but I guess, you know, broad question, you have written about some of the different guys that are going to dictate the market, and apologies, I don't have that piece right in front of me, so you can recap it. But, you know, where is your head at in terms of this deadline? And then more specifically, as you know, because of COVID, you got these front offices that are now playing catch up. They spent so many weeks trying to fill out rosters with 10-day guys and keep their head above water. We forget sometimes that, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day. These guys are trying to get some sleep in as well. So a lot of fatigued executives that are trying to figure out now how they can improve their roster. How do you see the whole season?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. The trade conversations that happened in the first 2 weeks of January, everyone's just bullshitting everyone else anyway. So I just don't think that's going to stop anything meaningful from happening. It's true. Nobody had time to do any of these trade calls the last few weeks because they were just figuring out how to get 8 players on the floor that night. But now, as we're seeing things hopefully shift in the league and guys are getting out of protocol, there is more time for that to happen. I still see Simmons is kind of the first domino because I think there are other teams that are waiting to see what happens with him before they go in different directions. So it's going to be interesting though, because certainly Philadelphia has shown they're willing to wait things out, right? Are they willing to wait things out past the trade deadline? I personally have a hard time seeing that, because then you're giving up basically on truly contending in a year of Joel Embiid's prime when you don't know how many of those years you're getting.
No, I agree 100%. And I think there was a time not too long ago when I thought maybe they would go past this deadline. I think my opinion has changed. And part of that is you can just tell from the tenor of discussions with different execs that you talk to who have connected with them, where you know this game better than anyone, but you know, it's that thing where, you know, Daryl and that group is not going to come out and say, yeah, we're trading them before the deadline, but you know, there's a level of urgency that people are picking up on. What of these possibilities looks like it might potentially, or which of the possibilities might have the most legs, as we sit here talking about it today? What scenarios have left you kind of shaking your head and saying, yeah, I could see that?
The one I could see is actually Atlanta, because I think Atlanta has a clear motive, right? That, and they have the ability to get something done in terms of what they can offer in return, right? Is like John Collins has technically never been in the All-Star game, but Philadelphia can say face at a press conference and say they got an All-Star caliber player. If they get other assets with that, like say Cam Reddish, that's A, you know, something for them going forward, but B, something they could put back in another deal with Collins this summer to get somebody they like better potentially. So it lets them fight another day too, if they choose to go in that direction. I don't think Collins is a perfect fit for Philly, because having him and Tobias Harris next to each other gets a little wonky or whatever, but it's probably about as well as they could hope to do. I mean, like if you look at who else is like truly motivated to do something there, I think you would definitely look at Minnesota. But does D'Angelo Russell really fit what the Sixers have right now? Like, I have questions about that. And no. I don't see what else. Yeah, well, no. Would be
here comes Slater.
Yeah.
Here comes Warriors guy.
Yeah.
Easy answer on that one. What do you think of Simmons in Atlanta? I mean,
interesting on two levels. One, you have Simmons and Capella, so you have two non-shooters. So how do you resolve that? Two, when Trae Young is in the game, Trae Young is on the ball, and he should be on the ball because he's a brilliant offensive player, which means Ben Simmons is not on the ball. So what are you doing with him? Can you use him as a screener? Yeah, you probably can, you know, a lot of the time. But then again, like, you run into the same thing. Like, okay, what are we doing with Clint Capella then? So I do think you run into some issues with fit there in Atlanta. But I think the thing that would motivate the Hawks is they are just so bad on defense right now at the point of attack. And Simmons can help them so much on that end that I think Travis Schlenk may be inclined to just like make that deal and kind of live with whatever. And then if he has to make adjustments in the offseason, he does. But their pathway to getting better on defense, and they really need to get significantly better. I mean, Simmons is the clearest acquisition that you could make to impact that.
This kind of dovetails nicely into what Slater and I were talking about before you jumped on, John. We were breaking down Clay Day and the Warriors' success. And what I find interesting about the Simmons Atlanta scenario is that Travis Schlenk, Hawks GM, obviously previously of the Warriors, you know, he was part of that group that chose not to trade Clay Thompson and Draymond for Kevin Love back in 2014. And at that time, you know, it was largely because they were smart enough to know that Steph Curry, like Trae Young, is a wildly talented offensive player and somebody who is augmented by having somebody next to him who can defend. And you know, the idea of Ben Simmons having Trae to have his back for this Hawks group that has just fallen off a cliff defensively makes a ton of sense. I think there's some more layers to those talks and, you know, trying to get clarity on this going forward. But the thing with Philly that's interesting is, you know, you hear some chatter that they wouldn't mind getting off Tobias's money. You know, he's a hell of a player, but that's a huge contract. Yeah. And so I think that might be part of the situation as well. But in a vacuum, Simmons in Atlanta makes a ton of sense, for sure.
He'd theoretically be like their Draymond, right? I mean, that's what they would want. But then
that would be the that would be the idea.
Trae Young would have to like learn how to play better off ball, which I'm sure Travis Knight would love for him to do. But you know, because that's what makes Draymond work is the fact that Steph Curry can go take it this possession, take it the next 10 possessions.
Trae like disconnects his controller when he's off the ball. Well,
and he's not alone in the league. That's most of these guards, right?
There's a guy in LA who does that, who used to play in Oklahoma City, Slater.
He actually bangs his controller against the wall. He does not. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think it could be good.
You talk about Paul George or someone else?
Yeah. Paul George, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, that's the one. No, I think it would be interesting. Sleep deprivation's kicking in. I forget what direction I was going in there. But the Hawks, man, you have the surprise run to the East Finals and a lot of hype and buzz and fun that comes with it. And welcome to pro sports. Welcome to the NBA. When the pressure comes back quick, man, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Schlenk was out there making some pretty pointed public comments the other day that kind of felt very much like the coach that's just trying to rattle his locker room a little bit. You know, talking about how he's questioning, you know, his, some of his decisions and how to build the team, which is kind of shots fired right at the guys that he paid this summer. So, you know, I think there's pressure there. The Minnesota thing, John, as you know, there's a lot of layers, you know, when you've got the ownership change coming and Sachin Gupta trying to make a splash so that he can hold on to the job. Safe to say, though, it sounds like your feeling is that Ben is, you know, going to be the domino that's got to fall first and then everything speeds up from there if that does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, we'll see what happens after that, because I do think that the one of the interesting things that the play-in tournament did is it distorted the market of buyers and sellers to where there's way more buyers than sellers now. And so I do think that makes kind of all in, kind of push your chips in or whatever you want to call it, trades harder when you're like a team like the Bulls, let's say, where you want to take Derrick Jones Jr. and a first round pick and turn it into another starting caliber player. Well, there's not a lot of teams who are going to be willing to give up a starting caliber player right now because they're all playing for something. So that becomes a real challenge, especially when Sam's Kings hang on to Harrison Barnes so they can chase 32 wins in the 10th seed.
That 10th seed, baby.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that.
Is there anything sadder than the Kings wanting that 10th seed so bad and the other five teams they're competing with essentially not even really trying for it at all, and the Kings still not being good enough to get it?
Hey, they're only half game behind the Spurs right now. They take down Cleveland tonight. They're right in it. All right. They still got this.
Here's my two observations, and Slater knows this gentleman. I think, John, you might have run into him. So James Hamm has covered the Kings for a long time, mm-hmm. and he's now living the Substack life, which the thing I do love about some of the Substack voices is you know, some of these folks, you're not under the corporate wing, you get a little looser, if you know what I mean, yeah. From a coverage standpoint. So James has gotten more pointed with his coverage now than he was before. He was on the post-game press conference with Tyrese Halliburton last night. I don't know if you guys saw this clip. And as you know, pointed questions go, this was a pretty good one. He says, Tyrese, what did you see competitively? You guys look like a team on game number 75 when you're not headed for the playoffs. What happened there? And it was just like, damn, you know, uh-huh. and Tyrese, you know, and to his credit, he kind of owned it and said that he didn't know the answer. But every night, there's some version of that for the Kings, or Alvin Gentry just losing his mind and announcing yet again that it's the worst night of basketball in his 34 years of doing this.
Is that performative at all? Because I'm with Alvin, like baby to Vivek, because I'm like, really, the worst night is like a, you know, midseason Kings loss. Like he's had,
I don't know.
He had some like, didn't he have some, he was coaching the Suns in one of those playoff runs where they had some heartbreakers.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's more like just from a morale, pride, spirit standpoint, he's making it really clear. He doesn't think too highly of the way these guys are wired. And over time, I mean, it might win him points with ownership and maybe even the front office. And you know, he better hope the locker room, I mean, listen, locker room needs to look different next year. So what these players currently think probably doesn't matter all that much. But, you know, I can't imagine he's scoring a ton of points there because it is, you know, fairly candid criticism coming all the time. But, you know, as litmus tests go, it doesn't get much worse than this. Occasional friend who I'll bring up on the pod, neighbor John, who's a big Kings fan, told me today that he accidentally agreed to go to the Kings Rockets game on Sunday, which coincides with the 49ers playoff game. And you have this diehard Kings fan who's legitimately pissed basically that he has to go to this Kings game. That's how bad things have gotten in Sacramento.
What, Anthony, what do you think Sam did to De'Aaron Fox?
I think I mean Elson.
Sam brought him to neighbor John's garage and they pumped too much iron and, yeah. and took protein shakes and
that's what
took
happened
away his speed. Yeah. Could
listen,
be it.
This is friend of the show. Well, I don't think Amin's been on, friend in general. I thought about this earlier, John. Amin, about a year ago, getting into it with De'Aaron Fox on Twitter over the opinion that Amin Ellison had shared that De'Aaron is, you know, or who Ja thinks he is or whatever the hell the saying was, like De'Aaron and Ja as a debate somehow entered the NBA media conversation a year ago, and it seems pretty absurd at this point. One guy is lapping the other.
Yeah, that's like the Darren Williams, Chris Paul debate at this point, right?
It's not even close. I think that's actually a way better debate. Like at times, Darren was right there. You know what I mean? At times. But this is tough. And the hard part for De'Aaron is that, to be honest, in a vacuum, last couple of weeks, like, he's been putting up numbers and kind of numbers that weren't there earlier this season when they were struggling. But rough times out here. Barnes is a guy that certainly I think they're going to get calls on. They are wide open, as I reported. They do want to build around Halliburton and Fox, but they're taking every single call and turning over every stone. They have interest in Simmons. We'll see what happens. John, I have lied to you and kept you way longer than you agreed to go on that huge check that is coming your way. You know, I'm sure it'll get bigger for the Tampering podcast appearance, but feel free to jump if you need to go. Otherwise, we're going to keep chatting away. I don't want to break my word.
I look forward to that $3.75 Starbucks gift certificate, Sam.
Slade's coming out of Slater's pocket. He's the big money guy.
Wow, jeez. Take him to his favorite Sacramento coffee shop, which I need the name of because I need to
get Temple.
Temple.
There you go. Temple. Named after former Kings and Grizzlies legend Garrett Temple.
Okay, then get him a gift card there. He actually might appreciate that.
I like it. John, thank you for joining us, brother. Be good. Right. Keep up the good
thank
work.
Thank you. Enjoy Memphis.
Thanks. Yep. See you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Slater, you have also done your time. This is probably going to be the longest day on the beat for you this season, I'm predicting. I feel like you don't get...
There are some days on this beat.
Worst part is that you not only gave me a ride out to my car last night, but I didn't even come on the All 82 pod. I don't know what kind of teammate I am.
That's fine.
You know?
I got you in the barrel. There's going to be plenty of games down the line that I'm going to drag you into. We didn't talk much because John hopped in so quick. I mean, what were your takeaways from that event last night?
I was glad that I went to that game. What year was the 60-point game?
Oh, that was Durant's first year, I believe. So that would have been 17.
So that day, this is just a memory in my mind. I was going to go to the Warriors game and, you know, like always with this role, you know, there's not necessarily games you have to go to unless you're covering a playoff series during the postseason, whatever. But I didn't go to Oracle that day and always regretted it because it was one of those moments that people talk about. And so there was no way I wasn't going to go see Clay's return. It just kind of felt like another moment where, you know, you can never see a 60-point performance coming, but, you know, we knew the mood going into this return. And we knew we had just seen over the course of really the last year or so that, like, you know, as Clay started posting stuff to his, you know, IG account about his boat life and about his perspective and sharing more of how he was handling this challenge. You know, I thought Marcus Thompson did a good job capturing this in his column today, is just the idea that Clay, even beyond basketball, had really begun to represent to a lot of people who followed him, just kind of a neat, positive kind of spirit that, you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade, and trying to keep your head and trying to just grind day after day and see incremental progress. And there was something impressive about that and inspirational, if you will, for a lot of people. And so I wanted to see hear the reaction from the crowd. The only bummer, if I'm being honest, is that because of this damn virus that we all keep having to fight and navigate. And we talked about this in the press room after, is you got 18,000 plus people, most of whom thankfully had masks on. So from a decibel level standpoint, it wasn't the, you know, ear splitting noise that you used to hear at Oracle or even as loud as I thought it would be. But there was tons of love. Happy for him that he's back doing what he loves to do for a living. And I've written that before. Like, I don't care if it's Steve Kerr with his back, any of these guys. You know what I mean? Like, if you take the money away from it, this is what they enjoy doing. It's their passion. It's what they're, you know, they kind of feel like professionally they're here on earth to do. So I'm happy for the guy. You know, it was fun to watch. And like he told you when you asked him post game, you know, same old Clay, 18 shots in 20 minutes, the only guy in the entire league to get that many shots up and so little time.
Yeah. Again, I'm maybe come from a more unemotional standpoint. I thought you looked good on the court, which it, to me is a big deal moving forward. You wrote about the defense. You know, I think the tests coming up will be more informative, as you kind of alluded to, including this one in Memphis tomorrow night. You know, no Draymond Green in the Grizzlies game. But, you know, Clay was guarding like Lauri Markkanen and kind of the bigger Cavs lineup. I want to see, is there any situations where he gets on Ja Morant? How does he stay laterally with Ja Morant tomorrow night? Desmond Bane is a tough matchup. I just, you know, we're about to see more and more coming up, but I think, you know, first impression, not just the dunk, but the confidence to shoot the jumpers and just really generally the way he was moving, it was like, oh yeah, that is a rotation player that's going to help him. And that was kind of the big thing. Like, is he definitely going to be a help right away? It looks like he will be.
I wanted to ask you, actually, and I'm glad you kind of reminded me, you know, he said late in his comments, and I'm paraphrasing, that, you know, I can't wait to be that guy defensively who's out there guarding the other team's best player every night. And I had some folks in the comments section of my story today kind of rightfully point out, like, or at least raise the question of, is that who they need him to be anymore? Have those days come and gone? Do you think that he's going to be that guy? And I only ask that because Jordan Poole is a very good defender, and I'm not saying by any means he's their stopper now, but you got Gary Payton II, who's phenomenal on that end, who they can obviously throw on some of the league's best wing talents. You know, like where is Clay's role defensively when he's at his best, and how have things changed possibly from before he got hurt?
It, you know, there is not much of a burden as maybe there once was on Klay Thompson, and shouldn't be. Andrew Wiggins, will, you know, let's say they open a playoff series, they're playing the Clippers. Like, Andrew Wiggins is going to be guarding Paul George. Let's say they, you know, are facing Portland, even though Portland doesn't look like the Portland of old. But in against the Portland of old, Damian Lillard would be guarded almost primarily by Klay Thompson. I think Wiggins would get a shift. I think Gary Payton II, who has exploded onto the scene and just had his contract guaranteed and is viewed as a you know, a firm rotation piece the rest of the season, I think he would get a long stint, and Klay would find himself, I think, will find himself for possessions on these guys, but he won't be, you know, when he was like 38 minute per night workhorse, like chasing, you know, all the best players around. That is no longer happening. But at the same time, like, this, the identity of this Warriors team is best defense in the league. They have bad offensive nights. Every single one of their losses this season has been on a bad offensive night. They've actually scored fewer than 100 points in three straight games. And I think that Klay Thompson will boost the offense, and that's important. But for them to win the title, they need to just be absolutely sturdy at every position defensively. And that will include Klay Thompson bringing just that defensive endurance, focus, strength, and lateral quickness, which is probably my biggest question mark on it, is like, how does he deal with speed? There was one possession last night where he got blown by. So to you know, in a roundabout way to answer your question, like, no, he definitely doesn't have the burden he previously did, but he's gonna have to be a good defender for 30 minutes a night in the playoffs, because they need good defenders everywhere to win the way that they want to win.
Within that, and I'm not even trying to be funny, I should have checked in with you last night before writing this. It's your beat, and you know, you and Marcus are always all over it with Mr. Kawakami. But I had written, based on the intel that came my way, that their kind of rough plan with the team and Clay was to get him back and kind of completely have the reins off from a playing time standpoint, you know, as the postseason neared, that it was going to be a slow progressive thing, and some kind of sense of, like, you know, don't be surprised a few weeks from now if Clay starting to get impatient, you know, like, now that he's back on the court.
A few weeks from now, did you see when he got pulled? It was like 2:30 left. He looked over at Poole. He's like, me? Really, me? And it's like, obviously you. And then I remember the crowd started chanting like a minute later, like, we want Clay. It was like, Not happening. I don't think Rick Celebrini green lighting that one.
So what do you think? I mean, what's what's the plan versus what kind of reality might we be looking at as far as when he's just out there playing? And if he plays 39 minutes, he plays 39 minutes.
Yeah, look, you're going to see different examples of this tug of war between Clay and Celebrini and Kerr and like the patient approach, which, you know, that it's been going on behind the scenes the last month to try to figure out when he would finally be greenlit to play. But now you'll see it in front of cameras, essentially, where this week is a good example. They have two absolutely marquee games later this week. They play at Chicago and at Milwaukee. It's actually Milwaukee's the first one. I believe it's Thursday, Friday night. Both are, I think it's TNT, ESPN. I'm not sure, but I mean, those are two really good games, right? Those are that's the defending Eastern Conference champs and then the current one seed in the East. And it's a back-to-back. And Kerr has already said they don't expect to play him on both sides of a back-to-back. So number one, which side of that back-to-back do you pick to play Klay Thompson? And two, how is he going to be like he's going to want to, now that he's like, you know, tasted blood a little bit, he's going to want to be out there every night. And I think that is coming up is going to be, a tough conversation with him. I do think the All-Star break will be kind of a key demarcation point. I think they're going to really ease it up until the All-Star break and maybe try to get him into the 20s and maybe dip their toes towards 30. But I think, you know how it works with the All-Star break. It is kind of this like really kind of get away for a little bit, come back refreshed point of the season for a lot of teams. I think that's when there's going to start to be like a feel of like, you know, like get him playoff ready when they come back from the break.
Good stuff, brother. Hey, I think you have your next event to get to. I think it's a James Wiseman tribute ceremony. What are we doing? What's the event?
So I have two choices. Either I'm in downtown Memphis right now. Either I go east and I go to James Wiseman's high school retirement tonight, or I go south. I actually cross state borders, go into Mississippi and watch the Memphis Hustle and the Santa Cruz Warriors because Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody are playing in that game. It's a tough decision here.
I mean, I don't know. One is a game that would be fun to watch, a little different flavor. But, you know, Wiseman is an important piece of their story, you know, probably be good at.
So you're telling me high school jersey, you've decided it for me. I'm going to go to the high school jersey retirement. I can watch synergy clips of the G League game
later. Or, you know, option C, just head for Blue City Cafe down on Beale Street.
Oh, option C can wait till later.
Good stuff. All right, man. Thank you for doing this. Joking aside, I know it's a long day and you made sure to squeeze it in. So appreciate you. Thank you as always to the Tampering listeners. We will be back next week. And we didn't even give a little love to our guy, Fred Katz, who could not join us this week. Fred will be back hopefully next week. And we appreciate you guys. Talk to you next week. Thank you.